This is Fresh Air.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
The sound of Dean Martin's voice on the radio was always my cue to turn to another station. I didn't like the Martin and Lewis movies any better. As for Dean Martin's TV show, what a womanizer. So why, when a new biography of Dean Martin came to my attention, did I immediately think, oh boy, I'd like to do something on that? Well, a few reasons. I've actually seen a couple of movies on video lately, like Rio Bravo and Some Came Running, in which Dean Martin was really good. In the past few years, I've learned Dino was a big influence on Elvis. And the author of the new biography, Dino, Nick Toshis, wrote an earlier biography of Jerry Lee Lewis. And I wanted to find out why someone captivated by a wild rocker would choose to write about a slick celeb like Martin.
Oddly enough, the only living person that intrigued me was Dean Martin, because there seemed to be in him, there seemed to reside a mystery far more profound than anyone else I could think of, including Elvis, who idolized him. He made Elvis look like a publicity hound. He made Elvis look like Jesse Jackson. It was just amazing. And I tried to plumb that mystery, and I went back to the source, and oddly enough, I went and I got his birth certificate, and it was blank. He had no name. And that was sort of indicative of what was to follow for the next 2 years.
What was the mystery to you that Dean Martin embodied?
It was basically, who was this guy that cast such a high profile and was so famous and celebrated, and everyone had a very distinct impression of his persona, and yet no one knew him. I did not meet anyone who understood him. His wife, who was married to him, his second wife was married to him for more than 20 years, said that he was a stranger when she married him, and 20-odd years later was still a stranger. She knew nothing else about him.
Why did you care? Was there anything about his talents as an actor or a singer that made you care?
What made me care was he embodied an attitude. He was a guy who prevailed. He's the only person who ever achieved the highest position in movies, in recording, on stage, and on television. Now, no one else could do that. Frank Sinatra never made it on television. And yet, he seemed to deride his own success, not take it seriously. He seemed to have no respect for acting, no respect for films. To him, recording was a lark. His idea of performing was to get on and off as quickly as possible and collect the check. He would not rehearse for television, and yet had the biggest show of a generation. And there was something about that, a person that if you look at the top of the heap of American popular culture as just junk, he seems to be the only person that ever scaled to the top of that heap who recognized it as such.
Did you think of his work as junk?
I think of the majority of his work as junk, just as I think of the majority of basically every American popular hero's work as junk. Of course, there are many exceptions. I think if you listen to Dean's early 50s recording of Return to Sorrento, if you see him act in The Young Lions or Some Came Running, there are glimpses of brilliance there that cannot be denied.
Yeah, it was a real surprise to me when I saw Some Came Running, which was just a few years ago, and saw Rio Bravo, you know, in the 80s, and realized, wow, there's real talent here.
The Young Lions.
Yeah. So in doing this biography, Dean Martin wouldn't talk with you.
No, I made every entree I could, and those closest to him told me that, A, I would learn absolutely nothing from Dean, that he's completely disconnected from his own life and past, and was not a good source for his own history. I would have liked to have met him just for that experience, and the closest I came one weekend as I was finishing the book was a personal message from Dean, which was, quote, tell this guy I won't interview him if he won't interview me. And that was it.
He's a recluse now. Was he reckless when you started the book?
Yes, he had, his interest in life, I'd say, began to flag some time ago, and with the death of his son, I think whatever little interest was left was drained from him.
You call Dean Martin the missing link between Bing Crosby and Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
Where do you fit him in there?
Well, like Sinatra and most of the other so-called crooners, Dean was influenced by Crosby. And in turn, Elvis's main influence was directly Dean Martin. And oddly enough, if you take one of Elvis's early Sun singles, one side is a song that Dean had recorded called I Don't Care If the Sun Don't Shine. And take another early recording for Sun by Elvis, it's Good Rockin' Tonight, which had originally been written and recorded by a black singer named Roy Brown, whose own idol and favorite singer was also Bing Crosby. So there is a link there. I think it went from Bing to some new chrome-plated sense of 50s cool to Elvis, taking it one step further.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Nick Tashas, the author of the new book, Dino, Living High in the Dirty Business of Dreams. I'm going to take a short break, then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Nick Tashas. He wrote a biography several years ago of Jerry Lee Lewis. The subject of his new biography is Dean Martin. When you were writing your biography with Dean Martin, did you go back and watch the Martin and Lewis movies?
Yeah, I did. I did. I watched. Well, Dean starred in over 50 films, and I saw them all from the abysmal to the terrific. The Martin and Lewis movies were strange, and it's difficult today to understand the vast success that they had. They still stand. Dime for dollar, some of the most profitable films ever made.
How did Martin and Lewis get together?
It was in New York. Dean was living with a bunch of people in a Times Square hotel and singing. He was a crooner. He was having some acclaim. Jerry had this strange act where he would play phonograph records and do pantomimes to them. It was called pantomimicry or something. And they played at a couple of the same joints, and at one place they started to fool around together on stage at the Havana Madrid. And the first time they were ever billed together was in Atlantic City at the 500 Club, and it became a huge overnight sensation, and it was just all the way up from there.
What was considered to be the magic of their act live?
Well, the way I see it, if you take 1947, 1948 as the beginning of so-called Cold War, America needed to be sorely distracted from the fear of that through some sort of cathartic insanity, which they did provide. Early tapes, early impressions of them on stage, it was just complete sheer lunacy. Plus, Dean singing, which was good, and the essence of their act was something that had never been done, and that was of a romantic lead, a sexy guy and a moronic monkey had never been done in comedy before as a stage act, and that was something new, and it just captured such a wide spectrum of attention from different groups, everything from old ladies to young kids. It just caught everybody.
Who initiated the split?
Dean did.
For what reason?
Over the years, it just built up where it seemed like it was the act consisted of Jerry Lewis getting all this immense praise for his so-called comic genius, and each film they made, Dean would be reduced more and more to his active part. It got to the point where he got to sing one song, and it was to a cage of circus animals in one picture, and even though he was a man with no great ambitions, I think he just got sick of this, and Jerry took more and more control of their films, and Jerry handed him a script one day for a movie that later became The Delicate Delinquent, Jerry's first solo movie, and Dean just said, forget it, and that was it. They played a few more dates together and finished the film, and then it was all over. And there was a lot of hatred there, enough hatred to carry them in a great chill for decades to come.
Didn't Dean Martin once say to Jerry Lewis, you're just a dollar sign to me?
Yeah, yeah, Jerry said that there was something special between them that they shouldn't relinquish. And Dean said, well, what's that? And Jerry said, I think it's love. And Dean said, you can talk about love all you want. I look at you and all I see is a dollar sign.
And Jerry Lewis told you this?
Yeah.
After Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis split up, Dean Martin started making movies on his own. And the first movie that he made in which he didn't sing at all was Some Came Running, which also starred Frank Sinatra and Shirley MacLaine. And I want to play a clip from this movie. I think we both agree that this is a really fine performance.
Yeah, I think he holds up the I think he's the best thing in the movie.
Mm-hmm. And in the movie, Frank Sinatra is a writer who's just returned to his small hometown, and he's just returned from the war. And
it's sort of this sequel to From Here to Eternity.
Yeah, yeah, and Dean Martin is a gambler. Mm-hmm. And here's a scene between Martin and Sinatra.
Hey, Dave, how would you like to make a pretty nice living without too much trouble?
Doing what?
Well, team up with me. I think we'd get along.
You mean gambling?
Sure, that's a nice profession. And you're pretty good at it.
No, I'm just lucky.
Well, name me one thing you ain't supposed to be lucky at in life. You take my old man. Now, he used to gamble when he was plowing up his fields, hoping for a crop. Sometimes he'd get one, sometimes he wouldn't. So I figure if a man's gonna gamble, he might as well do it without plowing.
Nah, I'm not gonna stick around here anyway. And besides, how can you get any real action in a dump like Parkman?
Oh, this is just my headquarters. I make all these big towns around here. It's a good idea, Dave. Then you'd have a lot of time to write. Why don't you think it over?
I just did.
You know, the kind of lack of caring that you were describing Dean Martin as having really works in this role. There's a detachment that really works for him.
He's terrific in a role like that. He's as I said, there are moments of brilliance that can't be denied, and I think his part in that picture is one of them. I think in that particular picture, he's the best thing. I think he was terrific also in The Young Lions. Well, he himself said at one point that that clip you just played, that film, he just basically played himself.
Did he become something of an existentialist hero in France after this movie?
No, they were too infatuated
with
his ex-partner.
In the 1960s, Dean Martin had a TV show that was very high-rated for a while. And, I mean, his image on the show, he was the drunk womanizer. The show was all booze and chicks.
That's all it was. It was just, it was the lowest common denominator. It was, instead of lapses in taste, he had lapses in tastelessness. I mean, it just went on and on like that until it reached a complete nadir towards the end when it devolved into the Dean Martin celebrity roast, which were a bunch of marginally alive human beings like Orson Welles sitting around making believe they were sitting at the same table. One guy'd be in Los Angeles, the other guy'd be in Las Vegas, and they'd be laughing at these hollow jokes. And it was just, it was something very bizarre there.
As you point out, and I think this is another interesting thing about what that show represented, is that somehow Dean Martin managed to uphold and flaunt family values at the same time. I mean, since the show was all booze and chicks, but like the Christmas show, he'd be there with his wife and his many children singing Christmas carols under the tree.
Right. He worked both ends, the underlying impression being that beneath this this rogue, there was a man who hewed to the traditional values of family and honor. And one of the things that hurt him was actually when he divorced his wife, Jean, of long standing, to run off with the proverbial young blonde, that it shattered people's illusions.
About him?
Yeah.
And his ratings went down?
They just completely plummeted.
That was Nick Toshis. He's the author of Dino, Living High in the Dirty Business of Dreams. This is Fresh Air.